to Community First, a podcast by Dow House, but for community builders. This week we got episode 2, and we have the audio from an earlier live stream where we were talking to Leo Cheng from Machi X. He's a Metacartel member and old school user of DAOs to do cool things. Machi X is a collective of artists using NFTs to reframe how artist royalties and stuff like that work. We have a great conversation about NFTs, about art, about the community side, and about the extent to which it's such a big shift in the industry that artists don't even believe that they can make their art and get paid for it with such little middleware. Anyway, great conversation. If you want to stick around for more of this, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and check out the show notes in the description for links to any of the cool stuff that we talk about, and head to dowhouse.club for everything else Dow House, and to explore some of the cool DAOs that are running there already. Without further ado, here's Leo. Leo, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the house party.
Thanks for having me.
We were just talking before you jumped on. So you like me, have never met any of these weirdos in person.
That's right.
which there's a distinct split because the pandemic hit and we had to stop doing meetups.
Right.
So like I have a different meetup crew that I never see in person anymore, and I still talk to. And largely, we've moved to Discord. But I've only ever been involved with these guys through Discord, essentially.
Yeah, it's like just about everybody on the call here I have had some contact with, but I honestly probably couldn't pick everybody out on the stand-up, even though I'm like, oh yeah, that guy, he's in this, he's in that. And then it's like, cool, well, in some ways it broadens the circle and sort of like we're all in some an odd trusted community within the trustless system.
Mm-hmm. I kind of wonder how, like, once I start talking to people in person again, if I'm going to be able to do it. It's weird even, like, when I go out, like, to the grocery store or something, and, you know, the masks things have become so normal where, you know, a year ago, it would have been weird to see someone with a mask on. But now when I see someone with a mask on, it's like, dude, go put on your pants kind of thing. It's like, where's your mask? It just is, like, why can I see your mouth right now? That's weird.
I overcompensate by saying hello to everyone like way more than I would if I wasn't wearing a mask every time I have to go out. And that impulse made me wonder at one point if the masks would cause like hat doffing and like, because we have ways of communicating that are still sort of like in a lineage from when knights used to wear helmets all the time. And so like we still go like this, which is, you know, sort of the salute comes from a knight lifting their visor to show that they're not a threat as they pass you on the road. So I don't know. I imagine a world where everybody starts doing a lot more of, you know, these.
Yeah, we're going to learn some different language.
Anyway. Awesome. Yeah. So you're a member of Metacartel. But then ultimately the project that brings you to us is Machi X.
That's right.
So you want to talk a little bit about sort of how that came to be? And
yeah, so Machi X started back in 2018, where just an experiment within the whole, we've got the blockchain, what can we do with it? And so, you know, we thought about saying, here, let's use the fact that you can tokenize things to create a market where there wasn't a market reasonably. So we want to apply this to music and say, look, you know, there's no argument that each song is valuable as intellectual property. Everybody would not argue that, you know, the thing is worthless. The thing is worth something. We can all agree to that. The thing being music and music copyrights, and that's lyrics and the words specifically, lyrics and song. But then there's no real valuation metric because there's no market for it. So when I dug deeper in this music market, you know, the consensus was quite that it's like you own a bunch of nice buildings, houses, real estate, but you couldn't sell any, first of all. There's no market for that. And second of all, there's only a market for renting, and there's only like three parties that'll rent that. So that's like Sony, Universal, and Warner. And so like, okay, well, what if we broke this thing out and that each fan couldn't, you know, you can get tokenized, a fractionalized ownership of the songs you love, and then you can participate in some of the royalties. We dug deep into the legal side of things that probably roughly said that, you know, in all the courts around the world, they don't get into royalty distribution. They don't see that as a security, yada, yada, yada. Maybe it's fine. So we spent a bunch of money, a bunch of time on lawyers and stuff. And then we ended up saying, okay, cool, we're going to launch this. And we're going to launch it in Asia, which actually was what brought me out to Taipei. Because like, there's no way I'm doing this thing with all the ambiguity in the US for blockchain. So I came to Taipei back in 2019. And then I started doing this project more. And then we launched a mobile app on both Google and Apple, and we spent a bunch of money building up an exchange backend and effectively tokenized on ERC20 a bunch of the tokens on for songs. We ended up rolling out 59 songs tokenized. They're all like large Golden Melody Award winner, which are like the Asian Grammys, and you know, they're all award winning songs, so that people want them. But it ultimately, you know, that first phase failed because it was really expensive to run an exchange infrastructure, because you can imagine maintain an app and all that, and then the consumer behavior was hard to change. So as I was thinking about pivoting, it brought me into sort of searching for what's next. And you know, what I learned was that even, you know, employees, people in the community, people jumping in because of promotions aren't necessarily in it for what we thought they would be in it for. And rather, it was the community people that really cared. It was the people who were like, hey, let me help you pump this thing. Hey, let me help you, you know, get the word out. Hey, and it's like, ultimately, it's a community contribution that made it make sense. So I started hearing about this weird DAO thing, which led me to the search in the beginning of the year in 2020. And that's how I ended up finding Metacartel and Peter and Deacon and crew here. And then that's how I started thinking, okay, this is it. So I want to learn about DAOs. I want to launch a DAO so I can be more harness the power of the community, etc. And that's roughly how it led me to this thing here and toward the beginning of the year. And we eventually evolved it toward the NFT art side.
That's really interesting with like that tie to how an NFT and a community, you know, the value in an NFT is really that the community sees value in it. And it's besides that it's attached to the song and the lyric, it's the community part is really like the important key factor there. That's really interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, initially the thesis was that, look, when you have a thing with three buyers, so to speak, whether that's a lease or an actual purchase arrangement, you can expand that to multiple parties and you're going to be able to basically increase its value. And it also turns out to be the other complexity involved, which is like people ask questions like, oh, well, if I have like a small piece, can I use it? You know, it gets into copyright rules and laws problems, and people start thinking, you know, can I start using it here and there? Can I do whatever it is to? And so ultimately, we thought to give it a try into NFT land elsewhere. Through my journey, I also ended up getting really deep into the metaverse, crypto voxels, probably own way too many parcels for my own good.
Probably a good investment, though.
I don't know. We'll see. I actually do have a tower that I told Peter about, and I call it the Metacartel Tower, and it's in Junkyard, right across from the Metafactory parcel. So I guess I might as well give it a plug here. Anybody that's here on the stream that is anywhere related to the MetaFam, which I'm assuming you are, we actually parceled out like within the tower. We have like multiple floors and we have suites in them, but there's nobody using them right now. And my intention was always like, look, if it's a Metacartel grantee, if it's a Metacartel Ventures portfolio company, if it's a friend of the MetaFam, just let me know. I'll put your name on there and you can have your own little suite in Crypto Voxels where you can put up pictures and show your project and put
links up. Whatever. Can DAO House get a suite?
Yeah, no, totally. You can get a floor.
All right, let's do it. And also Raid Guild, we should maybe sell our parcel over there if we make any profits and then move into the tower.
How are we going to put a castle in the tower?
You just have to build upwards past the building limits until they put that in via a DAO or anything else. Now, as a CryptoVoxels parcel owner, I'm like all for like, hey, you know what we should do is we should issue CryptoVoxels tokens. And then it should be based on how many parcels you own or the actual voxel volume you own.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother topic there.
I saw some talk on that on Twitter that we should do that.
Yeah, that's why I keep tagging you guys when I see it. I'm like, hey.
We should reach out to him and see what he's doing, because
there's actually a channel in the CryptoVoxels Discord about the economic kind of setup and the DAO structure.
Oh, cool.
You could just drop into their CV Discord and check it out. But, you know, the thing that's most amazing to me after having seen the various crypto communities, as you guys were talking about earlier, yeah, Discord, first of all, is a fantastic tool. And it's interesting how I'm now pushing everybody. Like, I don't even know why you're buying a Slack subscription. You should just use Discord. If nothing else, it's free. And then, talking to people within the NFT community, like, it is, in fact, the nicest community out there. Like, everybody's like, hey, you're new to whatever visual art, music, or metaverse. Like, let's help you out. And it's rarely like, oh, well, you're a noob and you suck. But this is more like, hey, how can I help? And I think that's fantastic. I love that about the kind of NFT community.
I've noticed that as well. It surprises me, even because more dealing with devs, which devs are cool too, but the NFT artists, like, I'm a little intimidated by them a little bit because they have such a different skill than what I'm used to. But then they're so nice and they're like willing to help, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is cool. Yeah, we could talk.
Yeah. You know, I think it would be really cool. I don't know if any of you guys here have met Jim McNellis from Avastars and NFT 42, Token Smart, that whole crew. They are actually so Jim and Nate, I forget Nate's last name, but he has a Twitter account, or he's a handle under Nate Alex, and those two folks are super into the technology as well. Nate more so directly into technology, but they're into the development of smart contracts, and they, I think, would be an interesting kind of extension / partnership, or just friend. Yeah. If you guys don't know him.
Yeah.
To what extent do you think, you know, like what you say the NFT community, but really you're talking about people that are applying, you know, the NFT, like, non-fungible idea to art, and so really you're talking about artists. And this is particularly, like, my perspective on this is tilted toward music, because that's where my wife has experience and I have legal experience.
Okay.
But do you think that community pops up because it's the nature of artists, or they are particularly oppressed because, like, the way that the music industry treats artists is not, like, it structurally unfair.
Yes.
As a product of the business that came to be, but, like, now that delivery is not so hard, you don't have to literally stamp a vinyl record and send it through the mail. Like, they still have all these essentially bullshit dynamics in the system that just take money from the artist and give it to the record labels, give it to the, you know, these intermediaries ultimately. And you know, and it, like, every once in a while, Bob bubbles into pop culture because somebody complains about their royalties coming out of Spotify. It's
yes.
Like, when you understand how the industry's really working and stuff, it's like, oh, it's not only is it so much more complicated than that, but also the answer is get the artists organized and tell them to stop accepting these shitty contracts that have all this stuff in there that the label is going to be like, well, you have to have a 5% breakage fee. No, you literally don't. A breakage fee is because vinyl records used to crack. Like, stop telling me you got to take 5% of what I'm supposed to earn because vinyl records sometimes break in transit. Like, I guess they would say it's piracy now, but anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, it's easy to unite behind the idea of, like, okay, we're the producers of the magical thing here. Like, how do we organize to, you know?
So about that, like, I read up on, you know, I read up on some of the music law books and I saw a lot of the stuff firsthand. Man, the music industry is so broken. It is amazingly how broken it is. And it's just like, the bottom of the hill here, and that all the shit rolls on are the artists. You know, you have these like performance rights organizations, and everybody's heard of like ASCAP and BMI, and nobody really knows what they do. And in fact, I just learned about that organization in Taiwan here called MUST, and whatever, by whatever name they're in and whatever jurisdiction you're in, it's just really weird. It's like, hey, so look, we signed with this artist for your publishing rights, and we pay you like, you know, once every 6 months, 6 months too late. And then here's like a check, and like, let's just for you to like, you're going to be okay with this amount I give you because it's a black box. And you're going to be like, so why is it like $500 and not, you know, $692.53? Like, how do you get to 500? You know, it kind of just is. And it's like, I think this day and age, right? You should have, well, Shazam's been around for, you know, a long time now. And it's like, you should be able to show me a dashboard whereby all of my songs are playing with like heat maps of dots breaking up. And it's like, this track is playing here, and therefore I'm getting like two drips of, you know, all the DeFi spinning numbers of like, oh, I'm making money here, here, here. Like, it should be that. And money should be sent to me immediately as an artist, not this whole like, you'll get it when you get it, and you know, it's not that much money, and we're not giving it a breakdown. It's like amazingly stupid why it's not like a phone bill where you should just have, you know, all the details. But anyway, I think the artists, that's also an interesting topic here, is I talk about the white glove service, and I wanted to see if I can actually get white gloves, and I failed, but just that idea out there. But you know, I think it is, it's interesting how, first of all, as a category of people, I think that they are very, they're risk-taking in a lot of ways, right? And they can imagine a future, right? You know, it's like, oh, well, imagine this future where this happens. It's like, yeah, of course, I do that all the time. Like, okay, cool. But then when it comes to technology, a bunch of them, by and large, are very risk-averse. And I think that's the spot that we've landed on right now, is like, initially we helped a bunch of, you know, musicians that have large label contracts tokenize some of their tokens. And then subsequently we went into the visual art world, and you know, one of the drops we did on our inaugural NFT drop actually had, you know, some street artists, the most famous guy of the street artists that we, most famous artist we brought in on the first round was this Australian street artist named Lush. He's got over 1 million followers on Twitter and Instagram, and he's be part of the Banksy Dismoland exhibit, and he's done some amazing art. And there are different artists here and there, and most of them are kind of, they don't really want to touch the technology that much. And then our recent artist, Sean Chen, who's done a bunch of work with Marvel and DC Comics, and he's done like Spider-Man, Iron Man, etc., all the stuff that you recognize. He's actually super like, hey, you guys figure it out. Like, okay, cool. So a lot of what we do, we have been doing at Machi X, is like talking to artists, onboarding them into crypto, and like saying, okay, cool, just send me this thing, whatever your thing is, and then I'll tokenize it, I'll take care of the selling of it, and then you'll just magically get some money on the back end. And I think what might be interesting to this crowd here is to share the experience where, after our inaugural art sale happened, I sent every artist the same email pretty much saying, hey, congratulations, your piece is sold here and here and here and here. Here's how many ETH that you got out of the sale. And then basically this is like the US dollar amount. Like, you know, how would you like to take care of this? And I gave these people the options of like, you got MetaMask, here's his website, download it, send me your address, I can send you the money. You've got wallets that you could do. Zengo is one of them that I like, and you know, set it up. You have like Threshold Signature, you know, get your money sent to you. Awesome. And another one is like, if I can find you, if you're a friend, I'll PayPal you, I'll hand you cash, something, and I'll just keep your ETH, that's fine. And it's naturally an interesting spread. It was pretty evenly spread to the people, the options that they took.
Okay, I was wondering, I thought you might just say that they all went the PayPal route. And I was just
gonna... No, actually none of them went the PayPal route. I was pretty amazed.
Yeah, I've had a similar experience in terms of, you know, trying to recruit largely, you know, friends from the indie music scene. And I've kind of gotten to the same thing. And I love the term the white glove, you know, because it sounds a lot less like, hey, I have to sit you down and walk you through this or else you're never going to do it. But that's just, yes, that's just how it is, right? I think the learning curve for crypto things is so steep. But then once you hit that plateau, it's like, oh, that's, I get this. Okay, so then the thing pops up here and I click yes, I got it. Hands-on is just the way to do it. Like, you need legit ambassadors who are going out and just saying, hey, I will help you with this manually. But then once you're over the hump, holy shit, is it going to blow your mind?
Yes.
I think that's really true.
But I also think, as it relates to DAO House too, this is also true, is that my goal was like, look, if you're ever an artist that we dealt with, let's get you a share in the Machi X DAO. You should have a voice. You should have a representation. You should have, you know, the ability to get into a member only chat channel, and then whatever, like, you want to participate, cool. If you don't, fine. And if you want to vote on stuff, and I know Deacon and I have gone back and forth on this before, or I was super excited initially, right, Deacon? I was like, Hey, that thing that you could just log in with the username password thing. I saw the prototype. Can we have that? Because that's what most people want. Like, they don't care about sovereignty. They don't care about not your keys, not your coins. They just want a place they can log in and bug somebody. They'd be like, hey, man, can you reset my password?
It's one of those things I'm stubborn on, but I think I'm in a minority there. So, especially with new users, we shouldn't be forcing my idealistic vision on everyone. So I think that is something, at least we're looking at a couple different options for adding a flow for new users that doesn't include having your own EOA.
Yeah. So I also, the current thing that we're doing. So we actually, I guess, since I'm on here, I might as well plug the fact that our second drop with Sean Chen's art is coming out on the 18th. So we are launching this set of NFTs, and you can bid on it with Ethereum, Machi X tokens, MCX, or Whale. And this is happening on the 18th over on our Comic X gallery on Crypto Voxels. So Sean Chen, as an artist, he's done some, he's done he's done a lot of art, and he's actually just started off with his own Wingman. It's called a Wingman comic series. And, you know, you can buy this comic book signed by him. Well, limited edition just ended. I guess the unlimited edition is launching on the 18th. But you can certainly look at most of the content for free if you just go to the Comic X parcel, which I guess, Kirk, I can give you the link later after the show. But you can go on there and you can walk through the comic experience. And kind of coupling back onto the amazing aspects of Crypto Voxels and the metaverse in general, just the experience walking through pages of the comic book, I thought that was pretty cool. The two DAO members, Penguin and Ghost Agent, actually built that. So I'm pretty proud of that. But, you know, after our current set of releases that we're going through, we're also working on moving back into the music NFT space. So we have one of the OG music industry guys from Brooklyn that's joining us in Machi X DAO, and he's got lots of hip hop contacts. I think if you're a DAO member, like, well, Deacon, you are, you might have seen his profile listed on our channel. I think it's pretty amazing. I am gonna hold that one back just to have a little bit of surprise factor there, perhaps. But we've been talking about how to bring back the music NFT thing. And I think, Kerb, to your point, the biggest thing we're doing here is looking for more artists like Andre, RAC, just people who aren't signed and kind of encumbered by the existing legacy system, which causes all these problems. So if you're unsigned, you don't have a publisher to deal with, hopefully, you know, none of that crap about in this jurisdiction, you can do this, that, and the other. And if you don't have, you know, a record label that, or a publishing house that does something weird to your contracts. And when you think about it, like, most of music revenue now, 75% and growing, is coming from streaming. In my very idealistic world, like, could an NFT then capture that 75% of the revenue stream and dumping that 25% that is sourced from, in fact, the legacy system? I think that'd be pretty awesome. We haven't worked a solution for that part yet, but where we're looking at how we can now help basically a curated a list of music NFTs, you know, make it out there as our next sort of thing we're experimenting with.
Do you, I'm curious, like you said, you know, you get the subset of people that don't care so much about the crypto side and all that kind of stuff. And you know, like that kind of hits the DAO space where, like I was saying, you know, if you can take the community and you can organize the community, you know, there's power in that, right? And I think the superpower of DAOs is around community ownership of sort of, you know, the central entity. There's kind of a broader difficulty I have a lot of times with, particularly with the artists, around the idea that they could even possibly have that power. Like, it's they're so abused by the system.
Yes.
That when you say, hey, but if we all just got together and said this, they go, yeah, that won't work because Capitol Records won't let that happen. And the funny thing is, actually, structurally, the industry is pretty ripe for this because they have consistently gotten out of, like, monopoly lawsuits by saying, no, but there's competition. And so, like, literally everyone's publishing contract has to be non-exclusive because that's how they work. So everyone can have a publisher and another publisher. So if you can cut the publishing company out, ASCAP and BMI can't say, no, you can't go anywhere else. So, like, you could just spin up an ASCAP competitor. Anyway, that's sort of a rabbit hole, but really the thing is more so it creates this mentality where when I say to people, like, you could just organize, like, Los Angeles local independent musicians union and then behave this way with the DAO, et cetera. They sort of, you lose them on that front too. And so I'm always trying to explore, like, what's the presentation to help with this? Because I guess, you know, like, ultimately you're talking about community organizing, like the kind of things that bring about labor unions. I think artists just sort of don't believe that they work unless you're already in the Writers Guild or the Producers Guild or some other, you know, sort of.
I think I've kind of two parts on that view. First thing is that the abused kind of learned behavior is definitely true. I've got artists that tell me, like, okay, so you take 50% of the proceeds, right? I'm like, oh, no, that's not how this works. I'm like, wait a minute. Why am I pushing back on people telling me that you should take 50% of the but then on the other hand, it's like, that's not, we're not here to screw you, man. Like, there's kind of like, here's my wallet, man. I'm like, no, I don't want your wallet. I just want you to get paid more. And I want your art into this world of fluffy unicorns and rainbows. And we can all get along. They're like, okay, so you're taking 50%. Have you not been listening to me? Like, I'm going to give you more. And you get 10% of sales after that on all the other sales. So you should talk about your art. Get to know your fans, get to know your collectors, and everybody wins together. And they're like, okay, so you
yeah, so
want
where do I send my 50%? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, dude, come on, man. Like, let's kind of break your bonds. Like, well, get out. It's kind of like, it's like you crack the cage open. Fly, birdies, fly. And they're like,
The funny, so like I've run into this in the legal space too, because it's another industry that's been cornered by this idea of like a between $300 and $800 billable hour. And so when you go to people and go, no, I made a widget to do that for $3, they don't believe you. They think it's a scam. Like, we spent a bunch of time interviewing users and we were saying, you know, what if it were free? And they'd go, I still would feel sketchy about it. And it's sort of like, just because we're doing a thing that used to be, you know, quote, lawyer territory and by the system and like episodes of Law and Order and like so many layers deep it goes in terms of the extent like that they're like, yeah, but that has to be done by a lawyer. And I'm like, I'm a lawyer and I'm telling you it doesn't. And they're like, yeah, well, that sounds scammy.
You're like, fine, really, $50 an hour, fine.
Right.
Who made me?
The tech we're dealing with here is so, it's so like, it's such a paradigm shift that when you say 50% and you go, no, we want 0.5, they go, this can't possibly be true. Like, am I selling you my child or something? Like, what, how is this?
Or not even that. It's
just free. Yeah.
Percent goes into a DAO or something, and you're actually part member of that DAO. So,
right.
Like in MatchyX, what are the kind of mechanics and how does that work with your token and with all that?
So, we have a little bit of, I'm calling it baggage because that's what it sounds like. And us, we did initially sell some MCX tokens to fund that first part of the project. That was expensive. There was some funding involved in bringing on the team, build the apps. And then, you know, when I spun it, so I spun the team down and started saying, look, those on the team that want to stay on, you can stay on as a DAO member. Let's do it that way. And here's some tokens. Not a lot of people stayed. People wanted just regular jobs. And I think if you're not passionate about crypto, then you're not going to be around because then it's just a job. That's fine. That's what it is. I'm sure we all know people who are like, yeah, cool, dude. But if you stop paying me, like, I'm not doing this anymore. And I think for a lot of us, it's like, no, we weren't really getting like paid that much anyway in this space. And we're not doing it because it's, you know, I mean, sure, pay is nice. But yeah, for us, the initial thing I was testing with was making sure that Moloch allowed for using MachiX as the token for the kind of ownership of the DAOs and then turning into DAO shares. That continues to be the case. We currently have a very low circulating market cap, I think. Not super low, but it's, I don't remember, maybe like 400,000 or 500,000 on the circulating market cap side, which arguably, like, is that even a fair valuation? I mean, in crypto land, no, but as an NFT, like, how are you going to justify a $500,000 valuation? Once in a while, it's kind of funny, we get these pump and dumpers jump into our Discord asking for information, and I just like, hey, would you like to join the DAO? Like, that's fine. And a lot of them don't say anything afterwards, but it's fine. but I feel like I'm sort of evangelizing the idea of a DAO, and I don't really do any of that participate in that sort of like pump and dumping. I think it's kind of funny that they do that, but anyway, so they're just like dumping on each other, and sometimes they're like, oh, I'm like some kind of gem hunter. I found this thing. It's like, all right, cool, dude. Anyway, here, buy some NFT art. And actually does work, because as like people were talking about it and NFT got hot this last cycle, some of these randoms actually did buy some of our art. But yeah, so what we're doing in our economics is that we take out the minting fee. So I also, we put in a curator program. So anybody here on the stream as well, we were interested, are welcome to do that. So basically take our DAO resources and take an artist that you like or a group of artists and come mint NFTs through our NFT contract that we love. Actually, I didn't talk about that NFT contract as well. Then you can take a cut of the proceeds as doing the work. And then the gas fees are paid out of some of the proceeds and the artist gets most of the money. And, you know, whatever leftover, that there's a small cut left for the DAO, goes into the DAO wallet. And then we've not actually taken money out of that guild bank yet, but you know, the idea here is to make it so that each DAO member then can rage quit and take some of the assets with them, whether that's in MCX tokens or in ETH or anything else. So we're continuing to evolve that model. We're also providing MCX token drops for DAO members. I'm sure Deacon, as a DAO member, you might have seen MCX tokens show up in your wallet every now and again. You're like, hey, what's this? So the way I see it is like, it's kind of like, I got this idea from Synthetics, right? Look, you just dilute the people who hold the tokens that sit there and don't do anything. The people who are participating in some level, at least just by joining DAO, you've done something. Those people deserve the inflation. And, you know, we did have like a liquidity mining program before this kind of DeFi summer thing. And I decided to, talking to some folks too, we kind of needed to shut that down because it wasn't really bringing that much value. But at the same time, we might experiment with that on the token economics front as well. But on the contract side, I did want to talk about, which is that I worked with the NFT 42 guys, Nate and Jim, I mentioned earlier. It was really surprising to me in the space of NFT land that when you buy something, it's not actually, it's not purely on chain as one would imagine. I think amongst this group of people too, I don't know if any guys would notice this, but like when you go to certain platforms, when you buy something, it's basically a redirector to some kind of URI. And then you just, I don't know, you might end up with like something you bought something you like, and you could potentially end up with as a example I like to reference, like wood sitting on bed, the next time you load it, you're like, oh, hey, what the hell is that? And so it's like, that's not what I bought. So I do think that it's important that when you mint NFTs, it's incumbent on the NFT minter to have a, you need to basically have some kind of image hash or file hash. And we put it on our contract that the Infinity team put together for us. We have both an IPFS and a Arweave hash, and that ensures that, you know, there's failover through redundancy, and that you can ensure that the thing you bought is a thing you should have in perpetuity. And that for the artist standpoint, you know, they don't have to worry about like, did I forget to pay my Piñata Cloud or IPFS bill, and that the file that I made and spent so much time on and some collector bought is no longer there.
That's a good point. And a lot of people don't realize that you're really just buying a hash.
Yes.
And in some cases, maybe just like a URL to an API that could be shut down at any time.
Exactly.
Like using IPFS and Arweave, it's way better because it's a hash and it can be pinned by anyone for as long as forever. But it's interesting because the NFT standard is so simple, right? It's just like post a URI to an image, put a title and a description, and that's enough to like meet the minimum requirements of the standard. And then you can add really as much as you want. And it's kind of platform specific. Every site does something different. And it would be interesting to have like a more like a gold standard. Like, do you have both Arweave and IPFS? Do you have like maybe some type of code to like regenerate this? Even if it wasn't there, you know, there could be a lot of different things you could do.
That's what I like
on chain, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's what really, why I like the NFT 42 team so much, Jim and the work he's doing. I'm a fan of the Avastars project, and, you know, on my, I recently changed my avatar pick on Twitter as well as on Discord into a CryptoPunk. And you know that, like, but Avastars is kind of like the current generation CryptoPunks, I guess you could say. It's kind of like, to me, it's that whole thing is pretty impressive because all the information is on chain. So when I talk about, okay, I'm proud of the fact that all our pieces in Machi X, you know, are redundantly stored across IPFS and Arweave. That's cool. But they're on a different level where it's like all of the information on the image is stored on chain on Ethereum, you know, in the mint. So it's like, okay, well, that's really going to persist for as long as Ethereum is around. And that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that is really cool.
Entirely on chain. Like, I don't think, yeah, I don't think that this issue is brought up enough where it's just like, you know, unless it's really on chain, it's not really there and it's not really yours. But I will also say, though, that I forget the name of the project now, but there was an interesting project where you buy the NFT and it does actually change. So you buy it with the idea that it evolves because it's impermanent, because the author can change the images. So, okay, well, that's pretty smart, too, because you take this kind of, you know, bug and you turn it into a feature. Like, okay, that's cool. There's some credit due there to whoever that started that one.
Yep. Yeah, there's a couple other projects that do that, like Pixel Chain, or not the – they have the data in the NFT, like Pixel Chain. And
right.
I wonder if Nifty Art does that, too, on XDAI, Austin Griffiths thing. But, yeah. Yeah, those are real problems, I think.
With music, it's interesting because instead of, you know, you're talking about an audio file, right? And so on some, and I don't mean the fans, I mean a file, file. you know, nice. You need to receive the MP3 and listen to it, right? So if the link to that breaks, then kind of the whole thing breaks. And so you have this thing of like, okay, well, now where does this file live? And is it gonna live in a stable place? And you end up, yeah, you need, you know, sort of maybe IPFS or something like that is the solution. But, you know, it it shows a point here where it's like, when you want to talk about a trustless system, well, part of what you're trusting with Apple Music is they have a server with the file and you're always going to be able to listen to it.
Right.
That's fairly true, but
most NFT contracts also have a way for the owner then to update that link too, which is another point of centralization, which may be good because people could actually fix a bad link. But anyways.
And that's the, I think that that's two problems, right? One, you have the idea that the link can shift, and two, in that I'm not trying to plug our weave, but I do think that their token model of having you could just pay for it and then pay once and it lives forever is theoretically very good. But I guess for that purpose, I should disclose I do not have any Arweave ownership. Just to
what is their token? AR or something?
Yeah, AR. Yeah, yeah. They've done. I think they had a little bit of, people were expecting a pump there when Filecoin was dropping, and then or dropping, not like decreasing in value, but dropping and like going live finally, and then it dropped too. But yeah, I do think that that's interesting, right? When you have like supposedly they're like Chinese state actors, you know, giving Arweave some problems, and that to me is always like, oh wow, cool. It actually works that these government entities care.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's something to watch.
So we've got 10 minutes left, 10-ish minutes left, and usually we try to wrap up with what I call the boost bash here, which it's taking a look like it's a. You know, from your perspective, this is where we, you know, this is open user research. What right. cool stuff could we build for DAO House that would help, you know, a community like yours? And I think,
yeah,
in your case, we've been talking to you about this all along. So,
yeah. Like some things that a non crypto user can onboard easily. Like they can be like, hey, I could just go through this. Whether it's a URL that they go to of a link that's like a like kind of username and password pairing, or there's an app, or there's something, maybe it's even a I don't know if you guys saw the Untitled NFT hackathon. One of the teams did a basically a bot for this guy DankVR, Jin. He and his team did a thing where they can through entirely on Discord, you can interact with like NFT minting, I think, and other smart contract things. If there's a way to simplify that down, though, not for engineers, but like for anybody to be like, dude, I finally downloaded Discord and I figured that out. It's like, could you through Discord the commands interact with DAO House? I think that'd be super awesome, because then that at that point is like, I'm just on this platform, and not only do I talk to people here and upload content here and share media here, I can also do my voting here. And then you already have the integration with CollabLand where you can have the user token gated access channel. That would be a really cool integration. Just but the overall theme is, how do we help onboard mainstream users who don't want to touch their wallets, and that can easily just have this option of having it in the app and then have it just automated, that they can, you know, the complexity is hidden.
Yeah, that'd be super cool. Got to add to the list.
Yeah, I think it's a...
Although we have explored some of those things for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's an ongoing, you know, sort of difficulty. Again, it's like, for the time being, the best answer is the white glove piece, right? The people that stick around are the ones that I say, well, hey, let's just put some time on the calendar and I'll just walk you through this piece. And then, but I do think, you know, there's ways to do it, right? And it's just sort of... I'm with Deacon in terms of like, I think you just have to rip off the Band-Aid and be like, no more logins. Sorry, they're not good. They're not safe. They're not helpful. This is how you get hacked. Let me show you this new thing.
It really is like a 10x on the experience if people would just like support it, you know, like authentication through like a MetaMask is just so much better than having to go through email. But it's not there yet. So
I just can't. I just don't think I can get my mother to use MetaMask.
Right.
That's exactly. Kind of the test that I.
Yeah, I was just gonna say. And there's funny things that, I mean, again, this came out of user interviews in my last project. Like my dad has a very visceral reaction to just the name wallet. Like I gave him one. It had literally fake tokens in it. I was just like, yeah, it's fake money. It doesn't matter. It's just an interface slot. And he was like, yeah, I can't stop looking at it. I worry about what's in a wallet. It's like my brain is just like, oh, there's okay, the money. Nobody stole the money. We're good. It's very funny sort of reaction to even simple choices, like just maybe even calling a wallet is the alienating thing for some people, which is like, yeah, but it's actually this crypto address, and it's not really a wallet. It's just a metaphor we chose, and now.
Is there, like, as for wallets and NFTs, like, is there, right now you guys are probably using a safe or something to hold the NFTs, or maybe one of you guys are, like, if the DAO could hold NFTs, would that be something cool?
Yes. I think that it would be something cool. I don't, you know, I haven't followed too deeply the Flamingo DAO that the folks from the LAO are doing. I'm also part of the LAO along with Meta Cartel Ventures. I'm just trying to snap up all them Badger tokens. it's I think for like Flamingo DAO, that might be super useful because the whole idea is for them to collect in the DAO format a bunch of NFTs. So I think that would be useful. I think you guys already have the Minion integration, the sidechain thing for reduced gas or gasless transaction. I know that's already on the roadmap and ongoing. I'd like to turn that around to you guys as well. As someone who is a summoner of a DAO, as well as, I guess in this case, a loot holder, how can I help and how can folks like me help?
Yeah, this kind of feedback is so helpful. Like when we're just sitting in a room trying to make assumptions on what users want, we usually make the wrong thing. So it's like really important in our flow to get feedback from the people that are actually trying to use this stuff and, you know, experimenting with it, dealing with all the bugs and all the things that they actually want. And so basically anything we build has to have that first step of someone actually requesting it.
We have a user interview link we can send your way.
Yeah.
If you want to talk to Spencer about it for a half hour.
Otherwise,
that's really time. So thank you everyone for joining us. Thanks Leo for coming by to
talk
about other stuff. We'll have links to Machi X and kind of everything else you mentioned down in the doobly-doo. So
yeah, thanks Leo.
Thanks for checking everything out. Thanks for hanging out, everyone. Like and subscribe if you're on YouTube for more. Well, hey, thanks for sticking around for another Community First. If you like this, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Sign up for a newsletter. The links will be in the description for wherever you can find us. And I think you'll enjoy what we got coming through in the next couple months. We'll be doing run-throughs of some of the new versions of the software. We'll also be featuring communities from within DAO House and just keeping a conversation going about what it means to build stuff community first. Thanks for hanging out. I'm Adam. See you next week.